Okay, so we're going to do chapter 10 today, Perek Yud. You found it?
Yeah.
Yep, so we're going to... So, I always like a bit of a background, because just in case people missed things along the way. So, just to remind everyone the context of it in general, right? So, the Tanya was written, as we said last week, it's called the Book of the Beinoni, the Book of the Regular Jew, the one who has the struggle. But also, at the very beginning of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe explains that it's based on a pasuk in Chumash, right? There's a verse in Chumash, in pasuk, that says, Ki korev eilecha hadover moed. When Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the Jewish people before they go into Israel, and he says, this matter, meaning the Torah and the mitzvahs, right, is very accessible, it's very easy. Korev, it's near to you, it's close to you, it's accessible to you. Very accessible to you, right? B'fichol, vavchol, asoisei. You know, to speak about it, to feel it, to do it. And the question is, what do you mean, kikorev? Kikorev, normally the connotation of kikorev is that it's like easy. One thing that's not easy is to keep Torah mitzvahs. It might be beautiful and deep and amazing, and of course that purpose in life. But it's not easy, right? There's a struggle, there's an inner struggle. There's distractions from the outside, there's external struggle. So it's not easy. And therefore, the Alter Rebbe says at the very beginning, he's writing a book of Tanya, at least the first part, to explain how's it kikor about. He adds one line over there in his introduction. He says, "Bederech arucha uketzara," the long and the short way. Meaning that there's two, you know, sometimes there's a quick, easy way to do it, but then it becomes complicated afterwards, right? Just so you understand, that phrase is based on a Gemara, where it says that there was an older person who had never been to Jerusalem in the times of old. And he comes to Jerusalem and he's trying to get there and he doesn't know how to go. And he meets some of the kids of Yerushalayim outside. And the kids of Yerushalayim were well known as being very clever and sharp. They slur a bit like it, actually. So he asked them, what's the route? What's the best route to get to Jerusalem? So they said, you want the quick... The short long way or the long short way? So he heard short long way, so he says, takes that route. And they give him a very quick shortcut. He takes it, and then he comes like there's bushes and there's thorns, and like it doesn't have anything. He goes back and he said, well, you asked for the short long way. It's a short way, but it's long because it's very hard to get there. So he says, okay, tell me the long short way. So the long short way is a long way, but you get there. You arrive. So the Alter Rebbe says, that the derech, the way that he took in terms of Tanya, and this is the basis of Chassidus Chabad, is that he's going to explain how Torah mitzvahs is really accessible to us, how it's possible to be on the path and the journey to serve Hashem properly, but it's a long, short way, meaning it's about thinking and understanding and learning and studying and exploring, and setting yourself on a sort of mindset which requires effort and work, but you get there, right? That's the idea. Okay. So, I was trying to explain what the next two chapters are because it's interesting that it would appear, I mean, we'll see later, not like that, it would appear that the next two chapters are not that central to the theme of Tanya because, as we explained last week, the Tanya is explaining the Beinoni, the middle person. Now, middle person, as explained in the beginning, again, just to get used to the terminology of Tanya, it's not really the middle person. There's three types of people, the tzaddik, the Rasha and the Beinoni. The Tzaddik is someone who's completely transformed, as we learn in this chapter. Doesn't even have an evil inclination anymore. The Rasha is someone normally translated as wicked, but we won't use the word wicked. We'll say anyone who's engaged in doing wrong things, right? Which is most of us. And then there's the Beinoni, which is the person who has the struggle, but overcomes the struggle, right? And as we explained last week, the Alter Rebbe sets the bar very high, explains to us what the ultimate is. The ultimate pursuit of a Jew is to be a Beinoni, which means to understand that we have the struggle between the godly soul and the animal soul, but yet to overcome the struggle and not to listen to the animal soul. However, that's very, very difficult. So I guess the path to be on for all of us is an aspiring Beinoni, right? An aspiring Beinoni. That's the goal. We don't look at the goal of being a tzaddik because we can't be a tzaddik. We are going to be people, most of us, that have a struggle. That's why we designed, and there's a lot of value in the struggle, as we explained a bit last week. But we are the struggle. Now, in order to understand what the Beinoni is, he spends... So what he did till now was he explained the animal soul very well and its pursuit. its pursuit of selfness, selfishness, self-centeredness, preservation of self, indulgence, and when left unchecked and untrained, it results in, and evolves into wanting things that are pure bad and pure evil. Explains the different types of klippah, the different types of evil that we have in the world, and so on. In Nefesh HaKis, the godly soul is all about being connected to God, and there's a struggle between them. As explained in the last chapter, the animal soul by its name is animalistic, it's impulsive, and therefore its headquarters is in the heart, which is, I'm giving a bit of a review of last week. And also it starts off with impulsive emotions, and then uses the intellect to rationalize it and to strategize. It spreads to the rest of the body, and its pursuit, the animal soul, wants to control the entire being, the entire experience of the human being. The godly soul is the other way around. The godly soul starts in the brain, it's intellectual, it's mature, it makes decisions based on moral thought-out processes, and then it goes to the heart and gives birth to emotion. And its pursuit also is to control the human experience, so that the human experience will only want to serve God. That's and do everything, and every part of our life should be completely God-centered, right? Again, I keep on mentioning this because I know people struggle with this sometimes. Like, what's the point of learning Tanya? It talks about such lofty things like, who of us is going to lead a life that's like, you know, we never even eat unless it's to serve God, right? That's like, we're not only talking about doing the mitzvahs and not doing anything wrong. It's a very, very high level, but that's the point. That's the way it happens. The way he sets the bar, and we take, and it makes a dent to the way we develop our mindset, and that's the way we try to develop the perspective on life. And each person in their own journey takes one step forward towards that as we go along life, right? And we keep on growing. That's the idea. But the view and the perspective of Hasidus is that what you need to do is you need to present it in its entirety, right? So that we have a pure perspective. The implementation, every person is on a different stage of the journey, every generation is on a different stage of the journey, and we just have to try and take one step forward. But the idea is to purify our perspective. Now, in Perek Yud, in the 10th chapter, and in the 10th chapter, he explains what the definition of a tzaddik is. Now, we're not supposed to pursue being a tzaddik, which begs the question, and why do we need to learn about it? Maybe we'll see a bit later, we'll try and explain a perspective. Because it helps us along in just a general perspective. Perek Yud Aleph, the 11th chapter, right, is defining a Rasha and the two types of Rasha. And then from chapter 12 onwards, chapter 12 to 12 is the famous chapter where he finally gets to, so the what is a Beinoni and how do we become a Beinoni and how do we pursue this the journey of being a Beinoni, right? So I'm just giving you a perspective. So if you, it's a little the next two chapters are a bit technical, but then we get to Yud Beis, and then the following chapters are all different strategies and different pathways and different ways of doing things, how we get onto the train that leads us in the pathway towards pursuit of being a Beinoni. Okay. So he says the following in Perek Yud. V'hine. Kesha Adam Mag... Now, just, sorry, before... Oh, I left you one there, doesn't it? Okay, you can take one. You take one with English if you want. It's easy. Yeah. Just before we start, you remember in the very beginning of Tanya, he brought the Gemara that talks about five levels, not three levels, five levels. Two levels within a tzaddik and two levels within a rasha, right? Yeah, so there was the perfect tzaddik and the imperfect tzaddik, and then there was the perfect rasha and the imperfect rasha, right? So in this chapter, you can explain both levels of a tzaddik, right? And what does that mean? So it's interesting because a tzaddik, we said before, very briefly, we said a tzaddik is someone who has overcome the struggle. So what does it mean? How can there be two levels? And that's what he's going to explain in a minute. Okay. It says, V'hine, kesha adam magbir nafshe elikis. When a person strengthens his godly soul, v'nilcham kol kachim abamis, and it fights so much with the animal soul, right? Atche megarish umevayir hara shabo, until he's successful, which most of us will never be successful in this, but until he's successful in driving away and exterminating almost all the evil, all the klippa, becholal asmari, from the left ventricle, as explained last week, that's where the animal soul is. Like it's written in the pasuk, v'arta hara mikirbecha. You're supposed to eradicate evil from our midst, that's what the pasuk says, right? Which also, well, Actually, the pasuk was said to the Jews as they went into Israel, and on a technical halachic level, that was a pasuk instructing them to get rid of idol worship within the land. They had to get rid of, of bad, right, of evil. But in Chassidus explains that actually it has a spiritual application as well, that we all have ra, we all have bad within us. And again, definition of bad, it doesn't mean evil. Bad means anything that's not godly. It might even be a neutral klipa, as we learned before, right? But it's still not godly, right? So the tzaddik, as we're going to learn, is someone that is able to eradicate that, right? Which means, not only has he overcome, again, this is just important, that's the difference between him and a Beini. Not only has he overcome the struggle in terms of like, he'll never do anything wrong, that's not a tzaddik necessarily, but he's overcome even the temptation, right? So he doesn't have a temptation to do things ungodly at all. I want to just also clarify something. So I think someone asked me this last week. It doesn't mean that a tzaddik doesn't do physical things, because by definition, any human being has to do physical things to survive, right? But it's about the motive of why we do physical things. So every human being has to sleep, for example, right? Just to use a very simplistic example. Every human being has to eat, right? But a tzaddik who has eradicated the evil within the nefesh abamis, the animal soul, even the neutral evil, right, has no desire to eat for pleasure, for physical pleasure. Unless it's a mandated pleasure. Maybe they'll eat for pleasure on Shabbos, because it's a mitzvah to eat, right? But even that, the pleasure is a complete... In other words, a tzaddik person just serves Hashem. He's a completely godly person. To the point where it doesn't even have the struggle of being ungodly, right? So of course, will they sleep? Of course they'll sleep, because you have to see, Hashem said, you have to take care of your body. Will they eat? Of course they'll eat. Number one, they'll eat, first of all, to survive, because it's a mitzvah, in order to have the power and the physical strength to serve Hashem. Completely the shame shemai, in other words, the eating is itself a mitzvah, right? And a godly experience, right? And won't have any even struggle about indulging for physical pleasure. Also, the tzaddik sometimes eats for a spiritual experience, like to elevate the food, as we learned before. So they might eat more than they need to survive because they need to elevate the sparks of kedusha that are there, which a tzaddik is able to do without problem because it doesn't have the interference of the personal selfish struggle, right? I'm not suggesting we try and get there. I'm just explaining what a tzaddik is, right? If we can just be disciplined how we eat, it would be also a good start. But, right? And this is beyond Shulchan Aruch, this is beyond keeping Allah. We're not talking about doing the mitzvahs you're supposed to do. We're talking about the whole being of the person, right? Just reminds me of a story, by the way. Just to give what I mean a little bit. So there was a very great tzaddik. In the time of the Alter Rebbe, his name was Aaron Kalina. Very, very great Hasid Rebbe, big tzaddik, huge tzaddik. One time, a chassid of his came to visit him. And that chassid, that follower, happened to be a classmate of his. They learned in cheder together. Right? And he sat down, and Aaron Kalina, some tzaddikim used to do this, sometimes offer the people who came to see them like a piece of food, or give them a piece of food, whatever, like it was a part of the bracha, I don't know exactly. So he gave him an apple. And the chassid ate an apple, and so did Aaron Kalina ate an apple. And as being an apple, this chassid had a distracting thought. And for a moment, he thought to himself, you know, it's a really strange thing. Me and the Rebbe went to the same cheder, we learned the same Torah, we were in the same class. He's eating an apple, I'm eating an apple. He made a bracha on the apple, I made a bracha on the apple, right? So what's the difference between us? So after a few minutes, Aaron Kalina, of course, had sensed what he was thinking, and being a tzaddik that he was. And he said, I'll tell you the difference between me and you. He said, you make a bracha to eat the apple, I eat the apple in order to make a bracha. That's it. I don't need the apple. Right? The apple, because it's part of serving Hashem. Like, I mean, not only the bracha, I guess the whole thing, right? In other words, my whole experience is godly, right? Okay, so someone does that. Now, however, we're talking about a tzaddik who has eradicated all the temptation of self, of self-interest. However, v'ein hara nepach l'toiv mamash. You have a tzaddik, one thing he wasn't successful yet. he completely squashed the animal soul, but didn't transform the animal soul. Right? In other words, didn't take the animal soul and completely turn it to something holy. Not just that he's holy, but his animal soul is holy. Nikra tzaddik she'eino gomer. That's called an imperfect tzaddik. He's a tzaddik because he has no struggle. But he hasn't harnessed the animal soul. Right?
But he subdued it.
He completely subdued it. But he hasn't harnessed it. What's the difference?
Right? Big difference.
Sorry?
Big difference.
Why?
Because if you subdue something, you can manage.
No, but I think subdue is the wrong word here. Because he's not controlling it. That's a benani. A benani controls it. Because if you control something, it means it can always rear its head again. The tzaddik, no. The tzaddik's taking care of it. It's gone.
He didn't use it.
But there's a tangible difference. Tangible difference is that the animal soul has something that the godly soul doesn't have. It has an animalistic passion. Right? We'll see later. That's number one. Number two, also, it shows that he hasn't... Okay, we'll see in a second.
Didn't you say that the tzaddik doesn't even have those feelings? That's the difference between the
tzaddik? Within a tzaddik, you have to ask like this. A tzaddik is the Tanya definition of a tzaddik. Again, not the normal definition of a tzaddik that we normally use in a legal sense that a person is just meritorious because he does mostly good. Right? In the true, absolute definition of a tzaddik is a person who doesn't have the struggle. Right? Now, it doesn't mean there aren't any levels within a tzaddik. There are many levels of tzaddikim, as he's about to explain, actually. Right? He's going to give a very tangible halachic example in a second.
Sorry, Rabbi. If you don't have the struggle, it doesn't mean you're passive.
Correct. No, he's not. Of course not. If you don't have the struggle, he's fully invested in serving Hashem. But he hasn't... There's a pasuk that says like this. There's a pasuk that says, V'rav tvuos b'koyach shor. There's amazing produce, meaning amazing power, in the power of an ox. What does that mean? Right? There's a certain passion that an animal has, a human being doesn't have, right? Sometimes, I mean, if you leave the animal untamed, it'll manifest itself in aggression and destruction and so on. But the animalistic impulses are very powerful, right? The imperfect tzaddik managed to remove the threat of the Nefesh HaBamas. It's not able to threaten him anymore. Not only not able to threaten him, so he should actually transgress. He's not even able to threaten him even to have a temptation. Fine. But he hasn't yet transformed the Nefesh HaBamas into something holy. And if he would do that, then that animal passion that the... So, let me give you an example. Every day in davening, right, we describe the amazing service of the angels who serve Hashem, right? What are the angels called in davening? Animals. Right? Chayos HaKadosh. Holy animals. That's how we refer to them. And because angels are emotional beings. In fact, Chassidus explains that the animal, that angels are actually the spiritual origin of our animal soul. Which is why, by the way, just as a side point, why we talk about them in davening. Have you ever thought about why we spend like 5 minutes in davening in the morning talking about how the animals, how the angels serve Hashem? Who cares? What's relevant is I need to serve Hashem, right? The answer is because part of davening is to subdue or transfer or channel or make a dent in, each one according to their own level, the animal soul, right? And that's a side point, this, but learning and davening have two functions. Learning is God talking to us, God connecting with that. When you learn, you strengthen your godly soul. But why we need davening as well is because davening is when we work with the emotions. Davening is an emotional experience. Trying to deal and control and maybe subdue or even make a dent in or ultimately transform the emotions of the animal soul, right? That's what's supposed to happen. And that's a Nefesh HaBamis thing because the Nefesh HaBamis is emotional. Now we have a problem. We sit down to davening and we think to ourselves, this is impossible. What do you mean? God gave me this animal soul that's a Meshugana. And he's impulsive and aggressive and everything like that. What am I supposed to do with it? So we spend part of davening talking about the angels because you should know the animal soul, actually, its root, its origin is actually holy. It's just the way it evolves down here that it's an animal, right? And therefore we need to know that it's possible to have a, to have an influence over the animal soul, right? Now, if we were to be an ultimate tzaddik, which is able to completely transform the animal soul, what that would mean is that that animalistic emotion, like the fire of the angels, will transfer to the, will be able to be harnessed. That fire of the angels, the godly soul doesn't have it. Because the godly soul is a mature being, a mature soul. Yeah, it develops a love, of course it's got a love of Hashem and a fear of Hashem and so on, and of course passionate, but not to the point of being an animal. Right? Because the origin of the godly souls, if you're really going there, you know that on Shavuos, right, we read the Haftarah about the celestial vision of Yeshayahu. Very Kabbalistic, very mysterious, but whatever it is. But he said he saw different animals, the ox, the lion, the eagle, right? That's all of the different types of angels. And then he said he saw the Adam Sha'ala Kise. He saw the man driving the throne, which is a reference to God. But it's called Adam, right? We are called Adam because our godly soul is more human than it is animalistic, which means more mature, it's more insightful. Which means that the emotions are controlled for a good reason, but they're much more mature and deep, but they still don't have that animal fire. So transforming the animal soul is a really good thing to do. Even we're supposed to a little bit harness some of that energy of the animal soul, even though we never succeed in transforming the animal soul. But right, but the tzaddik does, but this tzaddik was able to completely, he might have harnessed a little bit, he's able to completely eradicate the threat of the animal soul, but didn't transform it. So it still exists, but it's completely not a threat.
How does the metrakis work?
We'll see. He's going to explain.
But you've got two different sources of the soul.
That's the matrakis of the person, you mean?
Because if your body soul comes from primordial man,
I think, yeah,
and your animal soul comes from the heavenly,
and they both descend into your body, into you. Okay, it's a famous question. So who are you then? So he doesn't talk about it in Tanya so much, but there is a concept of tzitzis, there's a third soul called the nefesh ha-sichlis, meaning it's the conscious mind. And we make a decision, who are we going to let in? Yeah, but that's another discussion. Okay, so it says, nikra tzaddik she'ein adam, this is called an imperfect tzaddik, right? Now, I want to just explain something. When he says he's eradicated the threat of the Nefesh HaBamis, right? What is the Nefesh HaBamis at the end of the day, right? So Chassidus explains that this in Tanya and other places, just to clarify. Because we call the animal soul an animal from a soul from Klippa, right? From the unholy, ungodly, unholy. But the animal soul doesn't mean, we're talking about the animal soul, we're talking about the tzaddik completely removing the animal soul. It doesn't mean just removing bad temptation for bad, right? Because the animal soul, like I explained last week, the difference between the Yetzer Hara and the animal soul. The animal soul is a power of desire. That's what it is. It's a power to want. Now, the question is, why is that bad? Power to want is not a bad thing, right? The reason that we call it klippa or bad or ungodly, unholy, is because the power of wanting, that is the essence of the animal soul, is to want us, to want me, and to want anything that's good for me. Right? And that's why the animal soul, in its essence, is not bad. It is transformable eventually, but you initially you have to control it because it's a power of desire. It's a power of want, but it wants worldly things because it wants to survive. And therefore, if you leave it to its own devices, it'll end up wanting indulgence and ultimately wanting pure evil, right? So this tzaddik she'ein gomer, he's gotten rid of that power of want. He still has a power of want, of course, because his nefesh elokis also has a power of want. He wants to serve Hashem, right? But that power of want in the nefesh habamis no longer is there, no longer a threat. So it doesn't want I, it doesn't want the I anymore. However, he's killed off that strong power of want that is animalistic, which is actually very powerful. That's why it's an imperfect tzaddik, right? Okay, let's see, it'll become more understand as we go along, right? Okay. So what does that mean? It's called, and that's why in the Gemara it's called Tzaddik Viraloi. Because what happened was in the very beginning of Tanya, he actually quoted a Gemara which said that there's also Tzaddik V'toivloi, Tzaddik Viraloi. A Tzaddik and it's good for him and a Tzaddik and it's bad for him. And the simple meaning means something else. It means a Tzaddik who things are going well for him and then you have a Tzaddik who suffers. But that's not what it means in Tanya. Tzaddik Viraloi means Tzaddik is a tzaddik, but vera, the bad in him is still there, but it's low, it's completely under control. Completely, right? The hainush, eshpa adayin ma'at mizeira b'chol lasmoli. He has a little bit of still a trace of the nefesh habamis, that egocentricity of the nefesh habamis is still there. Ela shekofu fu batel letoiv machmas b'yotei. But it's so small that it's completely bottle, right? Lochein v'nidme loy, ki v'ashir v'yelech loy kol lagam. Therefore, it appears to him, it feels like it's completely gone. But actually, it's not completely gone. It's still subtly there, right? I'll give you a little bit of an analogy, a halachic analogy, which he brings later, but just to explain it. So, you know, in kashrus, right? Huh? He uses the word botlia. So in kashrus, you have this idea, just to tangibilize it for you, if that's such a word, right? So if a drop of milk falls into a bowl of soup, right? And there's more than 60 times as much soup as is milk, right? So the soup is kosher. That's halacha, right? Now, what does that mean? Does it mean the milk's not there? It is there. Microscopically, if you really wanted to, I'm sure they could do that in modern technology, if they really wanted to put the soup under a microscope and break it down, you'll find the milk there, right? In other words, did the milk become chicken soup? No. Does it look like the milk became chicken soup? Yeah. Does it taste like the milk? Yeah. If you tasted the soup, what are you going to taste? Only chicken soup. That's why we have the number 60, because there's no taste left. Right? But is it true to say that the milk is transformed to soup? No. Still there. The Torah says we're allowed to eat it. Doesn't matter. The Torah says that's good enough. Right? That's halacha. We follow the laws of kashrus. So the Torah says that's good. That's good. Right? There's no reason to be strict on that. That's just the way it is. We say it's like it's gone. But is it actually gone? No. Then you have certain things that takes 100 times. Certain things takes 1,000 times. But whatever the case is, whatever the halacha is with regard to that particular food, it's like it's not there anymore. But it really is there. So the tzaddik of Raloi, a tzaddik by definition means a person doesn't have to struggle, therefore the nefesh habamis is no longer threatening him. Not like the Beinoni. The Beinoni has to continuously overcome the struggle. But the tzaddik is overcome the struggle. But it feels, it looks like it's completely gone, but actually it's still traces it. Now, how do we know this? Like, what practical difference does it make to the tzaddik? He says like this, Avol be'emes in truth, ilu cholach v'cholach loy legamri kol harashamoy. If in fact the bad of the nefesh habamis would be completely gone, that would mean, or yenepach l'toy mamash, would mean it would become good. It would transform to good. Right? It's not like a piece of thing you can remove from your body. It's there. So it's either completely subdued or completely bottled, like it's nullified, like in 1 in 60, or would be completely transformed to good. Right? Now, So what's the difference? What's the difference then between a tzaddik v'raloi, an imperfect tzaddik, and a perfect tzaddik? Like, why are we learning this? Why is it? It's nice technically, but where would that difference manifest itself? Right? So let's learn that, and I'm going to explain to you why that's relevant to us. Because we talk. I mean, even the Beinoni is like beyond us. So what are we kriching in the tzaddik's world for? Right? We'll see in a second. Obiru inyan, right? So the explanation is like this. A perfect tzaddik, which means that the nefesh habamis is completely transformed to good. That's why he's called a tzaddik, and it's good for him. In other words, he's completely good. There's no trace. It's not because there's no trace, it looks like there's no trace. But there is no trace. It's completely transformed. It's through removal completely of stained garments, he calls them. It's a Kabbalistic term. What is stained garments? Again, stained garments means the garments of the nefesh habamis, the animal soul, which is, as we explained before, nefesh habamis, even at its very pure form, before it's gotten involved in real evil, the animal soul is a power of want, but wanting physical things, ungodly things, neutral things, but not particularly, not necessarily, right? That's why I explained to you, the Alter Rebbe, at the very beginning of Tanya, when he starts describing the animal soul, he right away says it's the soul that keeps us alive, but it's the soul that comes from the world of Klippah. Klippah means the unholiness, right? Why is it unholy? The kid's born, he has nefesh habamis, he hasn't done anything wrong yet. But it's unholy just because it's not godly. In other words, it's unholy because it's normal, that's the way the design of the human being is, right? So the mere thing that a person wants something that isn't godliness, That's part of the world of Klippa. That's the stained garments of the Nefesh HaBamis, as he calls them here, right? What happens if a Tzaddik Gomer is successful in completely removing any trace of the garments of the Nefesh HaBamis, right? So in other words, there's no trace of even wanting anything that belongs to the pleasures of this world. The consequence of that would be the following. The Hainu, Limois ba'oid betanugoi oilam hazeh, not only wouldn't he have any impulse and temptation to pursue pleasures of this world, he would actually have no tolerance for it. He would have a disdain for it. Now, it's very hard for us to understand this, right? What does that mean? Like, what do you think? There's a human being in the world that at the end of the day doesn't enjoy a pizza? I mean, like, you know, come on. See, it's interesting. I think that's why we learn this, just to understand the mindset here, right? Because again, there's what we can become, and we have the struggle, but it's also understanding the mindset of holiness. So I heard once a very good Hasidic story. There's certain Hasidic stories that are a little bit rough, but they're told by Fabrenians after they say a few L'chaims, and they told that way to bring out a point, right? So I'm sharing with you one of those stories. So there's a chassid that told the story like this. There was once a guy who had an inn, a poor man in a shtetl. And part of what he used to do, he used to serve milk in his inn, but he had a cow. So he owned the cow, right? Every day they would give the cow water to drink, right? So at least to survive. Such a chassidic story, this Gavali. So what happened was, but every Motzei Shabbos, there was a lot of guests, and the manager of the house, whatever, she would wash the dishes in a big tub, and all the schmutz from the cholent and from the chicken soup, and you know, would go into this water. And at the end of Shabbos, it was they had to preserve water. It's not like nowadays, you open the tap and there's water. So what I have to throw away the tub for? It's not fit for human consumption. We'll give it to the cat, right? And the cow used to look forward a whole week for this drink. This was like the delicacy, right? Not every day gets normal cold water, no taste. And Matzah Shabbos, the delicacy of the week, right? One Matzah Shabbos, the woman was washing up there, and she was organizing her kitchen. And she was distracted and she forgot. So she threw out the whole tub. And that Matzah Shabbos, the cow didn't get his thing, right? So he had to drink more water again. So he told the story. He says the cow was very, very upset. I was trying to think, why? Why didn't Chaim? What happened this month? Like, why didn't I get my weekly treat, right? And he thinks to himself, probably the woman that normally gives me, she's probably jealous. How come I have this treat every week and she never gets this treat, right? And in order not to cause jealousy, he says, just threw it away so no one gets it and it's all fine. So what's the point? What's the point of the story? Where is there is, you think it sounds like it's crazy, right? I mean, no human being would ever even, I mean, ugh, look at such a thing, you'd run a mile, right? Who would ever even take a teaspoon of that water? It's disgusting, right? But in the cow's world, it was delicacy. She said, by her ring, he said, Chavre, we're all cows. Right? That's what we are. We're all the cows. We have we pursue the pleasures of this world. We get caught up by trying to buy the fanciest food, fanciest this, because we can. So that's all we need. But if you put yourself in a different context, the tzaddik, right? The tzaddik gomer, the perfect tzaddik, who now has no trace of that desire of self pleasure in him whatsoever. His whole being now is to serve God. So not just that his whole being is to serve God, he doesn't have the struggle. He resents it. He thinks, ugh. Just to eat because you enjoy it. To him, it's like the human being watching the cow drink the water in Matzah Shabbos, right? Does it bring out the point of the story? Now again, we have the struggle, and it's not to say that we can't have, but you know, everyone has to know their journey. First of all, I mean, we are aspiring Beinonis, and that first of all means we have to do all the mitzvahs, and everyone knows. And then, of course, we have a mindset to be more godly, not to be materialistic. But that's what we learn about the tzaddik, you see, because even a Beinoni, or even a Beinoni is not perfect. You know, it's a very interesting thing. I just read a letter. Now, where did I see this? Give me 1 second. Just yesterday, I read a letter from the Rebbe, and it was a very interesting thing because it was exactly on this point. And he said, someone wrote to him, this is what happened. Someone wrote to the Rebbe that he feels like he's had a spiritual failure lately and he's not keeping all the mitzvahs, whatever. And therefore, he doesn't think he should learn, he's going to stop learning Tanya for the time being. Because, you know, I learn Tanya, that's really high levels, you got to. And the Rebbe says, on the contrary, 100% not. Doesn't matter where you are in your observance, doesn't matter where you are in your. Doesn't matter if you made a mistake, doesn't matter even if you're not, if you're just starting off in a spiritual journey, but you have to learn Tanya. Why? Because Tanya gives a perspective, right? As I'm only mentioning it because, like, why are we learning about a tzaddik there? Because the truth is that later on in Tanya explains, we all have to, even the concept of a tzaddik has to have an impression on us. Because even as aspiring Benyanis, and even people who aren't perfect in our mitzvah observance here, but we still have to simultaneously have this aspiration of living a God-centered life, right? Now, are we going to look at someone who enjoys a good meal as the cow drinking the water on Shabbos? Of course not, because we're very materialistic people. But we can become a little bit less materialistic, right? And we can become a little bit less indulgent. And part of how we do that is to understand the truth. And not to be upset that we're not holding this. I'm saying, like, the two things go together. It's not a problem, right? We are holding where we're holding. We're up to where we're holding. But we need to make a dent. And when we read stories like that, or we learn the Tanya like that, that there is such a concept where a person can be such a level of serving Hashem where physical pleasure is actually abhorrent, right? At least we get the perspective that maybe, like, that's not the be-all and end-all. Okay, I'm still going to eat, I'm still going to go out to eat, but, and I'm still going to take an extra spoon of ice cream, but, right? When perhaps I shouldn't. Okay, but at least I have that perspective. Maybe I won't be so much, maybe I'll cut down a little bit, maybe I'll live with a higher purpose, right? Because, and it's a really important message today, because nowadays we're living in a world where it's a world of affluence, and it's a world of great materialism, particularly our generation, right? And in fact, we're living in a world where even people who are very involved in Torah mitzvahs, and every mitzvah person does is beautiful. But it's coming together with a very dangerous level of materialism. That's actually a very, very problematic thing. It's ruining kids, it's ruining society, it's ruining lots of things. It's a different discussion, but I'm just saying, it's two separate things. In other words, we need to understand why we're doing mitzvahs, why we're serving Hashem, live for something higher, live for a higher purpose, right? So when you learn even about the tzaddik, and the tzaddik is not even something you're supposed to aspire to, but at least we get that picture of what that means, what that looks like, you know what I'm saying? So at least we, you know. So that's the perfect tzaddik, right? That anything that's not to serve Hashem, it's not, like, not even in his radar. Why? Because anything that's not godly is coming from the world of klippa and sitrachra. And the tzaddik doesn't want to belong to that world altogether. And v'chol mashum is sitrachra, everything that comes from the sitrachra, hatzaddik gomer who soin lebetach, the tzaddik gomer actually resents it. Betach sinner with hatred. Machmas goydla avas l'Hashem v'chassu. Why? Because he has such love for Hashem, and he's transformed the nefesh abam to such an extent. Avar rabba betanugim v'chibo yaseira anal. He's like, just so filled with that, right? Kihem zelo mazeh, because it goes together. It's based on a pasuk we say on Friday night. Oy have Hashem sinura. Those who love Hashem hate evil, which means the more you love Hashem, the more you hate anything that's ungodly. And the tzaddik gomer, because he's at the highest level of now transformation of the animal soul and love of Hashem, not only that, he's even transformed and harnessed the energy of the nefesh abamis to love Hashem. Therefore, he has no tolerance for anything that's ungodly. No, completely other way around. First, what do you mean others? Sorry, that's a good question. I'm just saying, if you have an intolerance for something that's ungodly, so then what's your relationship with someone else who you see is involved in things that are godly, right? That are not godly. So, I mean, the answer to that is, I can only tell the answer from an experiential thing, right? To see how the Rebbe is to. I believe the Rebbe was a tzaddik gomer, right? So, I mean, it was just the only thing.
Well, I didn't have to ask that question.
No, there's no question. I mean, the Rebbe in general, I mean, it's, yeah. For me, it's not a question. For sure, he was. There was nothing only his whole life was only godly. But because of that, when he saw another person, he didn't see the bad. He just saw the neshama. Mm-hmm. Not that he wasn't aware of it, right? He saw the identity of the person. I've always said this about, I just think it's a good, I'm bringing the Rebbe as an example because it's a good way to bring it out. I always say that, you know, people used to talk about the Rebbe as being someone who's very, very tolerant and very welcoming and very, right? And then you would talk to anyone, dollars, whatever the person was, or how observant they were, how would they. That's true, that's one side of him, but then the other side of him was that the Rebbe was very demanding. I don't know if there was any conversation that I've had with someone where he didn't ask him to do more, or her to do more, in mitzvahs, or, you know, in learning, or in tzedakah, or, right? How do these get together? Not only is that it's not a contradiction, it actually goes together. When the Rebbe saw a yid, he saw his essence. Who are you really? You are your nefesh elokis.
So the topic right? Really would be, it's very much a rare person, almost like an
avodah. A tzaddik gomer is very rare, correct. Yeah. That's what it says, right? Imperfect tzaddik is less rare, as he explains in a second. But there are, I mean, we have a thing that there are certain, in every generation, there are certain tzaddikim, even perfect tzaddikim, right? And they need to be there. They're there to give us energy and give us spiritual guidance and to give us spiritual perspective and so on, right?
So we're just striving to be.
By the way, it's not a person who's not in this world. The in Kabbalistic writings, the prototype for a tzaddik gomer, perfect tzaddik, is Rashbi, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Right? Shimon Bar Yochai was totally immersed in the cave for 13 years and he was totally in a godly experience. When he came out, he was very involved and engaged in physical things, meaning helping people and helping people with their physical paranoia. It's all part of serving Hashem. Right?
What about if one is struggling with that? They were trying to do the godly thing and they are upset with their surroundings because they see things in a much more godly way and they are horrid to it. And then they go away to just be themselves to continue to grow.
But the Zohar,
is that
so the
a selfish thing? Or is that,
yeah,
that,
the Zohar
is
says
that
that's...
warranted and then... Could they
of course.
Come back even if it's not?
No, they have to come back. The Zohar says, so what happened was, I'll go back to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. The famous story, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai came out of the cave after 13 years with his son. And his son, because of his intolerance of anything physical and material, he was destroying things. He would look at something and if it wasn't godly, he would be consumed, the Gemara says, right? That's the Gemara in Shabbos. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, no, that's not the way to do it. And he criticized him. The Zohar, by the way, criticizes Noach because of that.
Yeah.
Right? Noach, it's a famous expression in Yiddish. Noach was called a tzaddik in pelts. He was a tzaddik with a fur coat, right? He protected himself. He didn't. He went into. Okay, he wasn't able to do anything more than that at that time. But we know from Avraham Avinu, Moshe Rabbeinu, no, the true tzaddik. Why? Because not a contradiction. Tzaddik is someone, and a yid generally is someone that can hold two opposites at the same time. Even when a tzaddik, actually, which should be all of us, really, we're supposed to learn from a tzaddik, right? When we see another person even doing really bad, we don't judge them. Why? Because we might be, even if, I mean, there's certain levels of bad that we can also have an intolerance to, right? I don't have an intolerance to eating ice cream, but I do have an intolerance to someone who, I don't know, who steals, for example, right? Right, so let's say, maybe I have a little bit of, I'm not like a tzaddik, but I have intolerance to dishonesty. If I be someone dishonest, if I see someone, I'm not supposed to be intolerant to that person. I'm supposed to hate the bad, but not the person. And not judge the person. Maybe if I had his Yetzirah, I'd be worse. Maybe if I was in his circumstance, or I grew up like he grew up, I'd be worse than him. It doesn't mean he doesn't have a choice. It doesn't mean he's unresponsible. It's my duty to help him. Right? So that's what he explains here. So he says, I'm not going to do the whole thing inside. I want to do a chapter a week now. But so he says, that's the tzaddik gomer. But going back to the imperfect tzaddik, he doesn't have that intolerance completely. Not because that doesn't have the struggle. And therefore the nefesh habam is subtly still there, like I gave you the mashal of the milk in the chicken soup. It's still there, it's just non-functional, right? And he says that tzaddik she'eino gomer, the imperfect tzaddik, there are many of them. There are people that get to that level. They're medrashim, there's a medrash he quotes that there's sometimes thousands of these people, hidden ones, and real ones, whatever the case is, right? Not most people are only a beinoni or aspiring beinoni, but there is such a concept. It's not so rare. However, when it comes to a tzaddik gomer, right. Now I'm going to just, if you go to the page that says Tesvav on it, towards the end of the chapter. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom. See on top it says Tesvav? I'm not sure if it works the same in that panel. It says Tesvav at the left hand on the top of the side. Page before the chapter ends. He says that's imperfect tzaddik. Acha milas tzaddik gomur hu shomer Rav Shimon bar Yochai ro'isi b'nei aliyah v'hei mu'otim. Rav Shimon bar Yochai said, I saw humans of ascension. Always aliyah, always very elevated people, but they're very few. And he was referring to perfect tzaddikim, right? Now, why they're called b'nei aliyah, elevated people? She says, Shaloche nikroim b'nei aliyah shemahapchin hara umaylim oisoy likedusha. Because there are people, like we said before, that tzaddik gomor are people, not only they don't have a struggle, not only they do only godly things, but they're able to completely transform parts of this world and make it complete holiness. He brings a Zohar. He says, "Kad isa b'zohar ba'agdama, k'shrotz Rav Chiya lalas leich Rav Shimon bar Yochai." Rav Chiya, when he was still alive, he was a student of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, and he wanted to go up. His neshama ascended heavenward. I'm not sure what these things mean. I don't know. Baal Shem Tov used to do this once when he would daven. Neshama would go upstairs. I've never had the experience. I can't describe it to you, but it's something like that, right? He wanted to go into the environment of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, who had already passed away, right, in Gan Eden. Shama kolin nofik, so he heard a voice, and he said, Omar, man min choyin licha shoyche mahapchlen hoire. Who of you are completely able to transform complete darkness into light? Tam min meru lemisken, and can turn bitterness into sweetness. Ad lo yesen hoch, if you can't do that, you don't belong here. You know, this is a... You went upstairs, you want to see Rav Shimon bar Yochai, it's reserved for perfect tzaddikim, right? Up in Gan Eden. He's just bringing a point, in other words, that tzaddik gomor, because he has complete transformation, he's always able to transform darkness to light. We are also able to transform darkness to light, but in a different way, obviously. Every mitzvah does that. Every time we overcome a struggle, does that. But they're able to do it in a very, very thing. Now, I'm not going to do it in Sal. I'll just explain to you something he says at the end of the perek, just while he's ending off this idea of tzaddik gomor. He said another ingredient of a tzaddik gomor is this. That a tzaddik gomor serves Hashem for no interest whatsoever, even spiritual reward. Right? What does that mean? We have a concept in Judaism of reward and punishment. We also have this idea of olam haba, like you do mitzvahs in this world and you get this amazing experience in the world to come. Now, what's that experience in the world to come? It's not physical reward, it's not extra dollars, it's an experience of serving Hashem and understanding Torah in the most amazingly deep way, right? It says when the Shamas in Gan Eden, when they learn Torah, it's the most, we can't even imagine the pleasure that's in there, right? Because it's such a godly pleasure. A tzaddik gomor is someone that serves Hashem not even for that. Because at the end of the day, serving Hashem, even in order to get the most spiritual and godly reward in the world to come, is still an interest. Still me. Right? A perfect tzaddik is someone who mamash can serve Hashem, not even for that, right? It's a big madrega. There's a story about Shem Tov that I copied for some of you one second. The story of Baal Shem Tov, again, these things are very esoteric, I don't understand. But the story of Baal Shem Tov, that Baal Shem Tov was going to go to Israel. He was going to move to Israel. And Hashem didn't want him to, so he put stumble blocks in the middle of the way and he had to come back. But on his way, he met someone who asked him for a bracha, for something that Hashem had decreed, something bad was going to happen to the person. And Baal Shem Tov saw that it was decreed in heaven that this person should go through a certain challenge. And but the person really fetched the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov overcome, and he like forced heaven, so to speak, whatever that means. He forced it that this person should be blessed. And then it says that in the supernal, the heavenly Beis Din, they're a bit upset with the Baal Shem Tov for doing that. So they decreed, they punished him, that he's going to lose Olam Haba. He's going to lose the world to come. So his initial response was he was in pain, the Baal Shem Tov. Why is he going to lose the world to come? And then he thought about it, he thought, no, he transformed to tremendous simcha. He says, okay, it's great. Now I have an opportunity to serve Hashem for no reward. What's that? Even Olam Haba. Right? So why is he serving Hashem? Because of Hashem. It says the ultimate of this madrega is Rav Shimon bar Yochai. We learn in the Zohar That's why Lag BaOmer is such an amazing day, right? Shem Ba'achai, it says in the Zohar that before he passed away, he said that he'd elevate himself to such a level that he's in complete bond with Hashem. He became one with Hashem. In other words, he didn't feel himself to be a separate entity whatsoever. He operated, he was here in this world, he was doing things, but it was just a manifestation of God, so to speak, which is the ultimate bond. Right? Okay, so that's the ultimate of a tzaddik gomer. So this is the chapter, this explains tzaddik gomer. The next chapter, he's going to explain the two levels of a rasha, as I said, and then he's going to get in Perigud Bey, starts the journey of the Beinoni. Again, why do we learn this? Well, because in order to understand what the simple pshat is, in order to understand what a banyan is, we need to understand what a tzaddik and rasha is, and that's what Al-Tareb ultimately wants to get to, what a banyan is. But also, as it says, we learn it because even though being a tzaddik is beyond us, even in an aspirational way, but nevertheless, it you know, later on, it says, and the Rebbe brings this a few times also, I'll just finish with this. In the very beginning of Tanya, and he gets to it later, he starts off with the Gemara that before a person comes down to this world, they make the neshama take an oath, right? To heat tzaddik, you should be a tzaddik, and you shouldn't be a rasha, right? So later on, he explains what this means. He says, why does it say be a tzaddik, but don't be a rasha? Because not everyone can be a tzaddik. Now that we explain what a tzaddik is, most people can't be a tzaddik. So the oath goes, be a tzaddik, but if you can't be a tzaddik, if you're one of those most people, majority people, who can't be a tzaddik, at least don't be a rasha. In other words, what, you should be a beinoni. Okay, right? So he says, but then if that's the case, why do they make you take the first part of the oath? Shouldn't the oath be worded for the majority of people?
To be a beinoni,
or just don't be a rasha, whatever the wording is, but not be a tzaddik. So he says, because although most people in the world can never be a tzaddik, but number one, we can learn the perspective of a tzaddik, but also we have to have moments in our life that we're a tzaddik. Which means what we do have the ability to do, and this will come more apparent as we learn more and more what Tanya says about serving Hashem, we can have those moments in life where we just want to be godly, where nothing else matters. Right? And from time to time, we have to do that. We can have moments in our life where we just look at worldly pleasures as like, doesn't last very long, but it's possible. And for that, we could aspire. Right? Even though our main aspiration has to be in the journey of a rabbinity, but there are moments where we can be an aspirant, and that's why it's part of the oath. Be a tzaddik. In other words, at least sometimes, put yourself in tzaddik mode. All right, let's stop there.